Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, you let us know if there's any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. Now, if you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights on your platform of choice. We're coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, maybe Twitter, YouTube. Our YouTube channel is a great resource. You can go over there and check out all of the archived versions of this. We also publish these as a podcast. So wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, search for NIMSY Live, and you can find us there. Also, if you're a podcast person like me, make sure that you're going over to Multilingual and checking out their podcast. They have, if you go to multilingual.com, you can check out a number of resources. Of course, they publish daily news about the industry. Of course, they have their monthly magazine that they publish over there. But they also have Localization Today, so you can get quick snippets on a daily basis to make sure that you are keeping up with the industry. It's a really valuable resource. Another quick plug before we get started here today is for my Seattle people. If you're going to be around on October 3rd, there is a Seattle Localization User Group event, or SLUG for those in the know. And it's going to be here in the Seattle area. It's going to be after work over on the east side, and I am going to be speaking there. So come hang out, and I look forward to seeing you there. Without further ado, let's get right into it today. Today we are talking about managing social media presence across multiple languages and markets. It's a significant challenge for global brands. Many struggle to balance brand consistency with local relevance, resulting in ineffective communications and lost engagement opportunities. The complexity of managing diverse teams and adapting to local platforms, platform trends further complicates this task. To help our listeners overcome this challenge, Shaheen Samavarti will share the lessons learned from her extensive experience managing multilingual social media accounts. So, Shaheen, let me give you a quick introduction here before we jump right into it. Shaheen is CEO of Vera Content, an agency that specializes in managing localized content marketing channels for international brands with a strong emphasis on European markets. Her journey began as a journalist in the U.S., but she took a leap in 2010 and moved to Spain, where she earned an MBA from IE Business School. What does IE stand for, Shaheen? I was wondering.
It actually originally stood for Instituto de Empresa, which means business school in Spanish. Oh. So very literal.
All right. Well, it's the business school. Yes. When she got her degree, she gained valuable experience in corporate communication and was part of the founding team at the real estate startup Spot a Home before launching Vera Content in 2016. Now she leads a talented team dedicated to creating and localizing content across blogs, social media, and other marketing channels across Europe and beyond. In addition to her work with Vera Content, Shaheen's passion for community building led her to create The Content Mix, a community for content professionals, and Spain Guru, a resourceful platform for expats navigating residency and work permits in Spain. Shaheen, welcome to the show. It's good to have you this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, anything I missed out on in that introduction?
No, I was so impressed. You just covered everything I've ever done in my life in like 1 minute.
That's humbling. I know when I write a bio for myself, it's humbling. It's like, wow, my life can be condensed to one paragraph. What have I done with my life? Well, welcome. I'm excited. As we were talking before the show, you know, our audience here at NIMSY Live is largely localization people. So we don't really need to sell them the importance of localization so much. But I'm really excited to talk to you about the specific niche of marketing and social media and branding localization and kind of get into that. Because social media can be tough, right? And I've seen different brands out there manage it in different ways. And before I get into asking questions, just maybe you can give us a quick, you know, intro. Like, what is Vera Content? What do you do over there? And who do you work with? Who are your clients? Just give us some background here.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm CEO of a company called Vera Content, and at Vera, we've been in business now for 8 years, and we started out really as a written content creation company. So we create content in multiple languages with a focus on European markets. We work in more than 20 languages and a lot more markets. Over the years, we've really moved towards offering more marketing services. And one area where we've seen the most demand really is for social media content. So we do content creation for websites and blogs, and that's really where we got started. But actually, one of our early clients did, like, the project was localization of social media content. So we've been doing, like, our first social media project started about 6 years ago, and or even earlier. And then once we got that first experience with that project, we've been doing more and more of those types of projects. To answer who our clients are, they're like mid to large companies with operations across multiple European markets. And oftentimes our projects expand beyond Europe as well. There's always a European element, but we also do projects in Asia and in the Americas. I think that kind of covers it. I mean, the social media side of it is, like, we actually created an entire department now for social media projects. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And yeah, I just think there's a huge opportunity there for localization. The need for local content on social media just continues to grow because of changes in the platforms and how they prioritize local content. So,
right. Yeah, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with these different platforms. So when we're talking about social media, we're talking about, like, I deal a lot with LinkedIn and, you know, B2B kind of social media marketing. But, you know, here at NIMSY, we also have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Instagram, we have, I don't know, they probably even have a TikTok for us floating around out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. But there's threads now, right? And generally speaking, let's start here. When I talk to NIMSY clients and about social media strategy, like what they should do, generally my advice to them is pick the platforms that are most relevant for your audience and focus on those. And you don't need a Pinterest account, right? You don't need, you know, if your clients aren't on TikTok, like there's some folks in our industry doing really cool stuff on TikTok. Mm-hmm. Not sure the ROI is there though, right? Like, is that really a good place to sell B2B services, right? So what is your advice to clients around what social media, if new client doesn't really have a social media, or maybe they have a Twitter that they've had for 10 years, but want to dust the cobwebs off of, what is your advice for picking platforms and prioritizing those?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I generally agree with your advice. I definitely don't think it makes sense to try to be everywhere if you have limited resources. I mean, depending on the brand and their resources, maybe it does make sense to be in most places.
Sure.
But I think, as you were saying, also, I think, like, you can sell B2B services on pretty much any platform. And it might even make sense to do it on a platform like Pinterest, where you don't have competition, as much competition. Maybe other people aren't doing that much of the same type of content, so you would stand out more on that platform. But the thing is, you need to have a strategy for that platform and go all in on it and actually, you know, really prioritize it, like you said. Like, so you need to have someone really dedicated to spending lots of time on that platform, understanding, like, what type of content works there, keeping up with the trends, and constantly, like, of course, regularly posting on a consistent schedule. And if you can't do that on a particular platform, you're not going to dedicate the resources, then you probably shouldn't even be on that platform.
Yeah, that's kind of my thinking. It's like, go big or go home, right? It's, yeah. Social media is not really something you want to dip your toe into. Like, like, we have a Twitch. Well, here I am a hypocrite, because it's like, we actually sometimes stream this to Twitch. Why? Yeah. Because we're streaming anyways. What the heck? Just click the button. Let's go to Twitch as well. We're not getting, I actually stopped doing it because if I go live on Twitch and I bring the comments up on screen, I get a lot of questionable bot comments on there. So I actually don't do that anymore. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to focus on a social media platform, focus on it. Don't just passively throw stuff up there. Like, every piece of content that you publish onto a platform, you should be able to answer quickly without having to think about it. What purpose is this platform? What purpose is this piece of content meant to do? Is it meant to raise brand awareness? Is it meant to generate leads? Is it meant to, what is it for? And, like, we have, here at NIMSY, we have different platforms do an okay job of this. No, hey, respect to Melissa and Issa over on the marketing team. I, you know, they're doing a great job. But it's like you said, limited resources. How much do you want to invest? And ideally, it's like the content that we're putting out on Instagram would look different, have a different purpose, and feel very different from the content we're putting out on LinkedIn, content we're putting out on Facebook. And we shouldn't just be posting the same thing across five different platforms. Like, what's your thought on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. I think every platform has its own like special features, and you have to really keep like create content that's tailored to that platform. It's not a one size fits all. And I've definitely seen companies do that. They just have their Facebook page, and then they also want to be on Twitter or X. They want to be on X, and they want to be on Instagram, and they're just, you know, posting the same content. It used to be that you use something like Hootsuite.
I was going to bring Hootsuite up. Yeah. Because it's so easy. Like, why not? Hey, I'm posting it. Might as well check the toggle buttons for all five social medias, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that just doesn't work anymore. The algorithms are getting smarter. They're recognizing like when something is a lot of the platforms now have built in for example, on Instagram, on TikTok, like if you, there's priority given to your video if you actually edit it within the platform, or, you know, so you're kind of forced to create the content in the platform. You can't just use a third party scheduling tool anymore.
Yeah, I know. Like, I played around with TikTok a little bit, and like my first three videos like got taken down, and I was like, I don't even know why they got taken down, but it's okay. I'm giving up on TikTok.
Just launched our own TikTok channel for Vera content because we thought we have to put our money where our mouth is, because we're managing TikTok for a lot of clients, and we're like, okay, we're not on TikTok ourselves. Let's show what we can do at least on our own channel. So we just launched it about a month ago.
Well, let's go there since we brought it up. TikTok, who's it good for? Who should be on TikTok? Who shouldn't be on TikTok? Right.
Yeah, when you have like hundreds of millions of people on a platform, you can really target any audience, I'd say. Especially, of course, in the countries where it operates, which is most of them, operating in the US for the moment at least. So I think it's pretty, I think the same as with the other major platforms. Just depends, like you can target practically any audience there. And actually you can be very targeted in the way you create content and hone in on who you want to target. So,
and they've recently monetized. They have a lot more tools for advertisers nowadays than they used to. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I was actually just talking with my colleague about this, and she was saying that like TikTok platform for advertising is like a breath of fresh air. It's like they took everything that was wrong with Meta ads and like improved it. Like it's a much more user-friendly platform, like easier to target the audiences that you want. And
almost needs a four-year degree in Facebook marketing just to understand the Meta Ads platform.
It's absolutely
so complex. I mean, powerful, especially for that B2C market, but complex for sure.
But I did want to say on the point about TikTok, I know that it's a platform that's kind of, everyone thinks of it as being for entertainment. Like, I mean, you're on TikTok looking at short videos, you're kind of just scrolling and you just want to laugh or be entertained. But I think that that's changing, and like the types of content that can work on TikTok. I know like for a B2B brand, for example, it's like, okay, what, I can't create like I need to maintain my credibility as a serious business who's targeting other businesses. I can't go post like funny things on TikTok, right? Like, I'm not gonna put a talking airplane or whatever like Ryanair does, or there's some brands that have been like hugely successful obviously on TikTok, but that those kinds of silly strategies like don't work for every brand, depending on kind of the image you want to present and the tone of voice you want to get across. So
if you're a team of expert consultants like we are here at NIMSY, if like my marketing managers asked me to like post a dance on TikTok wearing a chicken costume, I'd be like, no, that ain't it. Like, I don't think that's what we want to put out there. Sounds fun, but
but actually like one approach that I've seen work really well is like taking clips of podcast episodes where it is like thought leaders talking on really like on high level topics, but then making it really dramatic. So like the thing about TikTok is that
putting that music in the background
has to have a hook. Yeah. You know, so you have to hook people in those first couple of seconds. I don't think it has to be silly content to work though. Like I've seen there's lots of people doing it with more serious content but hooking you in with something like a fact that's surprising or just something that gets your attention.
Well, and you say you got to hook them within the first couple seconds. And I think you're being generous there. Like, half a second to hook someone before they swipe up to the next reel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a TikTok thing. I blame TikTok for that. But yeah,
TikTok has made that now a thing across all the platforms.
That's the thing. It's we got Reels, you've got YouTube Shorts, you've got Facebook Reels, Instagram, all of these different things. So yeah, TikTok may have started it, but that's the way it's going. Mm-hmm. I think it's drastically reduced our attention span as a global society. How have you seen this trend towards short form, super short form content? How have you seen that influence marketing strategies around the world? Not just on TikTok, in general, right?
Yeah. I mean, how it's influenced, obviously short form video is being incorporated into practically every marketing strategy. And I think it's obviously I think the goal oftentimes is like, okay, hook them in with that short form content that's used for brand awareness, but then you want to drive them to your other more substantial content, especially if you're in B2B, for example, you want them to learn more about substantial thought leadership concept you're creating, not the short, silly video on TikTok. So
yeah, makes sense.
Or even on the platforms like you were saying.
So we were talking about every platform kind of has its own purpose, kind of has its own audience. Now, if I were starting out a business, any business, I'll leave it open-ended question, but I want to have, you know, like the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, and the LinkedIn. I would call those like the big four, in my opinion. That's just my opinion.
What
is the unique, like, how do I differentiate between those platforms? Is there a general rule, like Instagram is used for more personable content, you know, team photos, and LinkedIn is used for this, and Twitter is used for making announcements? Is there a general rule that we can break?
Yeah, well, before you were getting about the audience question, I said that, like, because I do think that there's like this kind of idea that you have different demographics on the different platforms. So if you're going to be posting on TikTok, you need to be focused on Gen Z because Gen Z are the ones who use TikTok more. But I don't think, obviously, even if only 10% of TikTok's audience are boomers, that still might be a relevant audience for you if nobody else is targeting them. You know, like, I think it's in terms of like who you should be targeting, what your purpose is. Like, I think it's like you need to have a purpose on each of the platforms, but it could be very different for depending on the brand and what you want to do. If that makes sense.
It does. You're talking to a consultant yourself, right? So it's like a consultant's favorite answer. It depends. Right. Let's schedule a discovery call. Let's dive deeper into that.
I do generally think like it makes sense to have like a different strategy, like to think about like, how am I going to use this platform differently? I'm already reaching this audience here. Maybe I want to reach my clients on this platform. I want to reach my potential employees on this platform. I want to reach like different stakeholders. You might speak to them in different ways. And it makes sense to have like a channel that's dedicated to them if you see like this is an effective channel for connecting with your community.
And I think just kind of what voice, what persona are you putting out there, and who is your audience, right? Like, what does our Instagram audience expect from us? You know, because over time, as you build that audience, they started following you for a reason. And if that reason is because you're posting, you know, pictures of, you know, team members and industry people, like what we do, you know, posting pictures from around the world, different industry leaders and stuff like that, and kind of staying in the know, it's kind of like the People magazine of our social media channel. And then all of a sudden you start posting like really in-depth technical how-to stuff on there. It's the wrong audience, right? Save that for another platform.
Right? Yeah. Well, as I was saying, it's not only like who's the audience, but like what kind of content works well on that platform and what lends itself towards one strategy or another. Right?
True. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and also we can talk about social media, but we can't talk about social media, especially from a brand perspective, without talking about paid versus organic. on this. So new client comes to you, a medium to large size global brand, and they want to define a social media strategy, a social media marketing strategy for their brand. How do you advise them to, do you advise them to start out organically? Do you advise them to jump right into paid social media? Where do you go?
Yeah. So it depends.
Yeah. Right. So, comma. I mean, and keep going.
I mean, so we're specialized in content marketing. So our projects, like the bread and butter of what we do is organic. So we first help clients with their organic strategy. And whenever we start a new social media project, we start out with a workshop. So where we really get to know their brand, understand what they're doing now. We do an audit of like their current social media channels. Generally, like every brand we start working with is already doing something on social media. A lot of times they are already in several international markets, but they have different people managing. Like they, it's a little bit like disjointed. I think a lot of companies like 10 years ago, they were just like, oh yeah, like let's test this or that on social media. And someone in some sales office in Japan opened an account and somebody yep. in Germany. And so you've got like all these different, different things happening posted by different people. And there's not like, so a lot of times they come to us like wanting to make sense of it all and centralize it. And because I think companies are realizing like, oh crap, we need to actually, be serious, like be paying attention to what we're doing in social media. Like actually it matters. Like this is in front of a lot of eyes and we need to like uphold our reputation and think about how we're presenting our brand on social media channels. And I think so a lot of companies are come to us like knowing that they kind of need to rein it in or make sense of it and centralize and have some kind of like checks and balances system. So that's what, I mean, the first step, like I said, is auditing, seeing like, what are they already doing? What's working, what's not working in different markets, seeing maybe what would make sense to replicate. So really analyzing that and then looking at what competitors are doing, looking at also like who's the audience they want to reach, what are other content creators doing in that space? Because a lot of times it's not competitors who are the ones to really watch. It's like, okay, who's just creating great content that your audience is paying attention to? And what inspiration can we take from that to come up with a great strategy for the client? And like I said, it's usually not creating a strategy from scratch. It's like, how can we take what they have and like mold it into something that's going to get them better results?
Makes sense. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, different markets and, you know, someone in the Japan office creating a Twitter account 10 years ago and kind of forget. Mm-hmm. What is the go-to on this? Because if I'm a brand, I have a website, I can have www.microsoft.com. And depending upon the IP address or language browser settings or whatever, I can localize that into 50 different languages and users are going to get fed their language and they're all going to Microsoft.com, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's different ways to localize a website and organize that, but I'm maybe oversimplifying it. Social media can't do that, right? Your content that you put out there is the content that you put out there. So how do you advise brands that are dealing in multiple markets? Do they have, if they're in 10 different markets, do they have 10 different Twitter accounts?
Yeah, this is like the big question. And there's, again, no right answer to this.
Right.
Although the only platform that does have like what they call global pages is Facebook. So on Facebook, it works like the same as a website. Like you have your main page and then you can. Yeah, and you can, it's actually based on your IP address, it shows you like the local version of the page. So actually Facebook is probably the platform, at least historically, that people, like we had the most demand for localization, because brands wanted to use this feature and like we're localizing all their Facebook content. Oh. Then it was like wanting to carry this over to Instagram, and then Instagram, that feature doesn't exist. You have to create separate channels. And then there's always like the debate, should we just have one big Europe channel? Should we make like 10 different ones for the different markets? And now we're seeing the same thing with Instagram. With LinkedIn, we don't have so much demand for creating. I mean, it doesn't make sense on LinkedIn. You have a company page and that's it. You're not going to create multiple pages.
Yeah.
But what we have done for some clients on LinkedIn is helping, like you have this like brand ambassador strategy where you have people in the local markets posting in the local language, like an employee profile is the one posting. And that actually gets way more engagement on LinkedIn.
Yeah, so tell me about that, because this is something I've noticed too. So when I'm talking to clients and we're talking about LinkedIn strategy, right? And build your company page. But the reality is no one cares about your company. I mean, the algorithm doesn't care about your company page. You can post until the cows come home on from your company page, and it's not going to get fed to anybody. No one's going to engage with it, right? The algorithm does care about people, it's posts, right? So what's the best strategy to grow a LinkedIn company page? And generally, like what I've done is, yeah, you can post from the company page, but then have your employees share it. Or better yet, just have your incentivize your employees to be sharing organic stuff from their own personal profiles. And then you can repost it on the company page. What do you find is the best strategy for growing a LinkedIn page without paying for it? Because LinkedIn, if you got deep pockets, they've got a killer paid strategy. You can buy followers basically on LinkedIn, but without paying for it, what's the best way to grow a LinkedIn page?
And it's great for targeted ads, LinkedIn
it's
as well. And
you can have super target great specific for targeted ads,
and all that.
Yeah. All that takes
actually
is money.
I got targeted by a super interesting campaign from it was Ford Iberia, because I'm based in Spain, and so it was like the CEO of Ford in Spain was posting in Spanish, offering me as a CEO, because they only targeted people who had CEO in their title, like a test drive, like a 24-hour test drive of a really fancy Mustang. And it was really cool how they did it, because it was like, it really seemed like it was like personally for me, you know? So I think there's really cool things you can do with targeting on LinkedIn. And in terms of, I haven't figured out the definitive answer about, because the problem with posting on employee pages is that employees like come and go. So you're investing all this in like building up your employee profile, employee's profile. And I think you just have to think about the near term results that you get from that, and like trying to drive people to take particular actions. But of course, once you build up a huge following on someone's page, if that person leaves the company, it's kind of a bummer, because they're going to take that to their next company.
That is the risk, right? And I think it's probably different for a company like NIMSY, because we're a human capital company where we sell expertise, and who else? Companies don't have expertise, team members have expertise, right?
Absolutely.
So for us, like, one thing that we decided when we started the company is, you know, anyone that works for NIMSY who wants it, right, it's, you know, it's my job to make them famous, right? Like, I want them, I'd rather have them out there speaking at conferences, posting on LinkedIn and stuff, than stuff just going out from the NIMSY brands, because it's a people-driven industry, right? But you're absolutely right. Then someone leaves the company and all of that investment's gone. And I think that's a win-win, right? They get to carry that on. And for while the time that they were with NIMSY, we got free promotion.
Well, it depends how much you're investing on having like content creators create content for their channel. Like, obviously, like the CEO of Ford Iberia is not creating that content himself.
Right. So. Right. Yeah, we have a limited marketing budget here. Right. I personally myself spent like 3 hours editing a video for one of our salespeople to post to her LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
The other day. And then we shared it from our profile. So.
Yeah. So obviously it would be a bummer for them if he like left the company the next day, but at the same time, I still think it's worth the risk and worth doing for absolutely. So, and I mean, if that high level person leaves, you hire another high level person who brings their reputation with them, hopefully, and has a strong LinkedIn presence as well.
Talking about LinkedIn, just jumping off from that point, there, you know, you can post all sorts of different content. You can post posts, you know, short snippets, right? You can post images, you can post video on most platforms, right, nowadays. You can do live streaming, you can post blogs or articles, LinkedIn calls them articles. All of these different content types out there. What are, and I know the answer to this, it depends, but what's the best content type out there? Like, or maybe a better question is, you know, what are the different roles of different content types? I'm talking about short form video, long form video, podcast, articles, blogs, posts, you know, surveys, carousels, like you can keep going, right? But what are the different roles of the different content types?
Yeah, I do think video is performing increasingly well on LinkedIn. So it's interesting. I mean, like we were kind of talking about that before, how this short form video actually, it works. It started on TikTok and it's it works everywhere. It started on Vine technically, but
rest in peace.
Yes,
they were ahead of their time.
Absolutely. Yeah, in terms of like performance of particular content types, I would like have to defer that to someone who works on LinkedIn every day, which is like members of my team. But I would say from what I've seen, from being a heavy LinkedIn user myself and someone who posts often on LinkedIn, I think whenever we do more multimedia content on LinkedIn, there's not as much multimedia content on LinkedIn. So you have like fewer people doing it. So actually when you do these kind of attention-getting videos, you stand out.
Yeah. Well, that's how we started live streaming here at NIMSY. We have this NIMSY Live, what is it, episode 121. I've done 120 of these before today. Mm-hmm. And it kind of started out during the pandemic, as many things did start out during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And people liked it. And like, not that many people are doing it. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like I figured, well, I'm going to do this until everybody's doing it and it's not cool anymore. I'm not the cool kid on the block, and then I'll stop it and then I'll do something else. Right. But
yeah, and live has that whole like, OK, it's happening right now. Like it gets that extra level of interest. Right.
Well, I love it because I can say like, hey, Giannis, thanks for joining. Who just left a comment. Need to jump. Thanks for the insight, Shaheen. I love that. And I also like it just because I don't have to produce anything. I don't have to open up Adobe Premiere.
No editing expected.
Exactly. I do live because I'm lazy is basically it. Yeah. But yeah, I think live is, I think more people should be doing live streaming, right? And I think more people, like one of my big cries on social media presence is authenticity. Right. And it's hard to be inauthentic when you're live in front of an audience or having a live conversation. You can't edit yourself. You can't go back and add a bunch of filters to your profile. You know, you get the greasy forehead, whether you like it or not, because you got the light shining on you. And maybe, you know, the question, I guess, is, you know, what is the role of authenticity? How has that changed over the last 10 years, I think? Because and then the follow-up question is going to, well, let's start with this. Over the last 10 years, I feel like the need for authenticity or the craving for authenticity from audiences, or at least perceived authenticity, has gotten higher. And the second part to this conversation is nowadays we have, I don't know if you've heard about this thing called AI, right? I'm sorry. I lasted half an hour before I brought it up, but you knew it was coming, right?
Yeah.
And it's making it actually so much, it's making things easier and harder at the same time, because it used to be challenging. It used to be kind of an accomplishment to go and, just using LinkedIn as an example, go and post every day and post high value content that's adding value to the audience, telling them something they don't know, you know, sharing some insights. That used to be more of a challenge. Now with, you know, ChatGPT and other LLMs out there, it's, you can just feed stuff in from AI into LinkedIn posts. And I see those. And as for myself, like I see a post written by AI and I can kind of smell it. And it's kind of ruining the authenticity of different platforms, I think. Like, what are your thoughts on this? It's not a well-formulated question, but around all of this going on.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like there wasn't a lot of authenticity happening on LinkedIn even before AI.
True. I mean, it's almost a meme how it's like the toxic positivity of LinkedIn. Yeah. That's true. But that's why I agree with that 100%, right? And that's why I feel so strongly about it, because I think it's something, you're talking about differentiating yourself, doing something different that nobody else is doing. That's why I feel so strongly about it. Like, be authentic, be yourself. Right.
Yeah. And I think that's why actually you see people just posting like selfies of themselves with their horrible meme, like written content. And actually, because it's like, oh, it's a real person, maybe I should pay attention to this. And then you're like, oh yeah, no.
Yeah. As long as there's some content there. You know, I have opinions about the selfie posts on LinkedIn too. In my opinion,
that's a sad attempt at authenticity. Obviously. Yeah, like, okay,
save it for Instagram is my. But if it's relevant, post a picture of yourself. You know, if I'm gonna post something on LinkedIn, I'm including a photo, right? I'm not just gonna post a text. This isn't Twitter, right? Because when people are scrolling through, it's going to catch their eye, right? But hopefully I'm going to have something better than this. Well, first of all, no one wants a selfie of me, right? But if they see a face, you know, people like faces and names. If they see a face, and I'm not talking about stock images, right? I'm talking about just like an actual face. They're more likely to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, like, video is actually a chance to show your face and actually say something relevant at the same time, not just a random picture. And on the point of authenticity, I want to also bring up, going back to TikTok, that, you know, they've announced that they're gonna allow thumbnails to be uploaded to TikTok,
Oh.
the same as on Instagram or on YouTube. And I feel like that was the whole thing TikTok had going for it, is that it was like you
You
couldn't add
couldn't,
a thumbnail. You could
yeah.
just see the video, so you knew kind of what you were going to get. And it feels like a really authentic channel in a sense, because it's like they're kind of raw, like quickly recorded videos, at least historically. And now you're seeing more and more like heavily produced things on TikTok as more and more brands get on the channel, for example. So it's interesting how that's also evolving and maybe becoming a little less authentic. And
Yeah.
obviously on YouTube and Instagram, all the thumbnails are just full of like AI images just designed to get your attention.
It's true. It's true. So, what is the role of AI in marketing moving forward?
Well, my optimistic view about AI is like I do think it opens up a lot of opportunities to like do more creative work and to let AI do the heavy lifting of like the boring stuff that we don't want to do. And I'm already fully taking advantage of that as much as I can myself. And I
Oh,
think
yeah.
so many people are.
Things like you mentioned when I introduced you in your bio earlier, right? That was AI. It was like, hey, ChatGPT, here's a LinkedIn profile. Write me an intro. I'm doing a podcast. You know, I mean, my prompt was a little bit more complicated than that, but not much, right? And you know, that fine. It just saved me 5, 10 minutes of writing a bio. For you, writing an introduction script, right? So that kind of stuff, I think it's great for. It saves time, so you can focus on other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And being in the localization industry, I think we faced a similar like question like a decade or so ago when machine translation was hitting the scene, and everyone's like, isn't that gonna just completely destroy the translation industry? And it hasn't at all. It's like vastly increased the amount of work for people in localization. I mean, localization industry continues to grow. It's clear that it's just a tool that's enabling us to translate more content than ever before, and that means we need humans to be involved in that process still. I think the job of the translator is completely changed, but
Yeah, it's going to
it's
change.
actually it's become a more creative job. We don't have to just like take one word and translate it into another one. We think about what's the best possible way to get that message across. And I think similar is happening now with like generative AI, large language models. It's like we're creating more content than ever before. That means we need humans in the mix to like, there's so much crap that we need to sift through.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work for marketers to make it good
Right.
and actually get the messages that brands need want to convey. So.
Well, and that takes us back to like multilingual content strategy, right? I mean, kind of traditionally, you have a marketing team in your domestic market. Let's just say it's a US company for simplicity, and they have a marketing team. They come up with a email campaign, a journey, whatever, right? And they spend a lot of time on it. They workshop it, and then they say, okay, this is our email campaign. It's good. Send it to localization, have it translated, right? Now, the point that's missing in there is that, especially for marketing, because marketing, you're looking to gain people's hearts and minds, right? And the cultural differences, even if the words are the same, what's important to people is different across different cultures. So if you're just translating the English marketing campaign, even if it's a great marketing campaign, you might be missing the mark on that, right? So enter transcreation. Where it's not exact translation, but you take the English and you transcreate it, you adapt it even more for the local market. And take that one step further, and you have local market or in market content creation, where you say, that's great, US, that you worked all on that. We're going to build our own, right? And it gets more costly as you go along that line. And I think this is something where perhaps AI might be able to help. Because AI is not a great solution. We've had AI for translation for years. It's called machine translation, right? And it's cheaper than using the large language models to do your translation. But what I think the large language models, where they could help is saying, hey, we want to create a marketing campaign. Here are the key points. You know, you write the story, you write the value, whatever. And then say, create me one for France. Create me one for Japan, right? Because The audience is very different between France and Japan. What are your thoughts on this? Like translation versus transcreation versus copywriting? And we don't have to talk about AI if you want, but just in general.
No, I mean, so yeah, that's exactly the space that we're in. And I think like a lot of companies, it's like kind of see it as either I'm gonna get this translated or I'm gonna send it to a local agency in that market and have them do a local campaign. And I think and for a lot of big companies, that means that they're working with like several different agencies in a lot of different markets. And basically what we do is we're like acting as a centralized agency. So we're managing that for you, helping you do those campaigns in the different markets. And I was saying we've kind of evolved from that, where we were purely like a transcreation agency and content creation agency. So we're focused really on blog content, just creating the content for social media, adapting it, and we've evolved into offering like full service marketing services because we saw that like that's there was like huge demand for that. And we really evolved from okay, just taking that content and adapting the content for the market, but actually thinking about the strategy behind it and like why are we doing that content for this market? Is that really going to work? Having like a team. So that said, can AI do this? like I think there's a lot of nuance to it. Of course, AI can help the process a lot, and that's something we've been studying really closely. Of course, we're super interested to see how can we use AI to like speed up some of our processes, make things easier for our team, make things faster. And we have found some in some parts of the process, like yes, it helps. Can it tell you if that campaign is going to work in that market? It can maybe give you some ideas, but the accuracy right now is
You can't
pretty
trust
weak.
it.
So,
Yeah.
yeah,
It can tell you anything if it's giving you
exactly.
accurate information or not. ChatGPT is a liar. So yeah, you
Yeah.
can't trust it. You can't build an operation around it, but you can
But
plug
you
it in.
can ask it to do research for you and give you its sources, and then you can go check the sources and see if it actually says what it says. So
And now you're
it can
back to
help
the
you.
point of spending more time. So
Yeah.
it's where do
Well,
you want to spend your time, right?
what I would say, like in a lot of projects, like we've been working on like a few key projects, like let's really try to implement AI to like speed up this process. And what we found is a lot of times we're not speeding up the process, but we are getting better results because it's helping us in the same amount of time do more, basically. So yeah,
I
there'd be
think
more,
it's great
like
for
you said,
first
like the intro
drafts.
that you probably wouldn't have spent more time on that intro if you had written it yourself, but you probably wouldn't have been as comprehensive in terms of like including all those little details that it was really like, wow, you really summed it up
Yeah,
perfectly.
because I'm too long-winded. If I wrote that intro, it'd be 2 pages, right?
Yeah.
And so, if I get something from AI, I can say make it shorter. It does. Right.
Yeah.
But let's talk about blogs, and shifting away from AI, because I don't just like talking about AI all the time. It's all anyone wants to talk about, but I want to talk about blogs, right? How relevant is blogging today versus 10 years ago versus 5 years ago? Is blogging still relevant? And I'm talking about company blogs. I'm talking about writing articles on LinkedIn, personal blogs. Because I remember, there was a time when blogging was like the way to drive content, drive users to your website. And there's a whole science around it, keywords and SEO and all of that stuff. I feel I'm not an expert like you on, all of this stuff. But I feel like the science has kind of gone away. It used to be you can kind of game the algorithms, and every time Google pushed an update to the algorithms, there were all these how-tos on this. And nowadays, I feel like the best advice out there for blogging is write good content, which I can't game that. I have to actually write good content, right? But how has the role of blogging shifted over the years, and how will it continue to shift?
I think blogs are still central to like every content marketing strategy, at least everyone
They
that
are.
we've
Okay.
worked on. So creating like regular publication of relevant content that's tailored for your audience, I don't think that's going out of style. And I think it's actually the blog content feeds everything else that you do, your social media content. It's like, I don't know, kind
True.
of, and I think it's important to have like a channel that is owned, like it's on your own platform, like so there's advantages to still obviously doing lots and lots of web content. SEO is still, of course, super important. It's the and but as you said, like the I guess the intelligence of Google basically has increased over the years. It completely you can't like trick it as easily as you used to be able to. So you can't just stuff an article with keywords and expect to show up on top. Like you
Right.
actually have to do something good. And you also can't only count on getting traffic through Google. Like it actually because it's ranking for relevance, like I find that it needs to be like a combined strategy with social media, that like you're also promoting that content. And by, since you've driven like traffic to that article, like Google recognizes that it's more relevant, and that also impacts your SEO ranking. And I do think also SEO continues to be extremely important, because a lot of the factors that go into having a high SEO ranking seem to also influence the recommendations by AI. So if you have a really highly ranking article, it's more likely that if you ask that question to ChatGPT, that it's going to also recommend, you know, your article as one of its results. So
interesting.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. It's good to hear from someone who actually knows what she's talking about, because I've been wondering that myself, like how relevant is that? But I like what you said about, you know, the blogging, putting out content on your own platform is kind of what drives everything else, because that makes sense, right? You write a blog and then you post about it on LinkedIn, or you create, you know, here's some key takeaways, and you post that as an Instagram reel or whatever. And then all of that content's driving stuff back to your website, right?
So yeah, ultimately, like, it's, you can't, I mean, you can sell things directly through social media, and there's lots of people who do that. But I think for a lot of businesses, their sales funnel is set up on their website, and that's really where you can drive your traffic to, and to be able to have more control over like how people navigate and end up buying from you.
Yeah. Well, and also it's like your audience, you have an audience. So like here at NIMSY at Multilingual, let's use Multilingual. I gave it a big plug in the beginning. It's a magazine, right? Huge audience, tens of thousands of people, you know, receive a print magazine in their mailbox every month. Digital subscribers, online daily new, big audience, social media, podcast, all of that stuff. Very, very small fraction of that audience are buyers, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about a sales funnel, it's, there's kind of two, well, there's the audience acquisition and then there's buyer acquisition. Buyers would be advertisers. That's how magazines make money, right? The same with NIMSY Insights. We're a consulting company. We sell high level stuff and we have a big audience, right? We have people that watch the podcast. Hi, Oscar. Good to see you. We have people that read the content online, people that follow us on social media. Very small fraction of that are actually decision makers that would purchase a product from us. How do you, as a social media marketer, manager, strategist, I should say, how do you make sure that your social media is not just, it's getting to the right people without using high cost LinkedIn filtering options that are just targeting CEOs, without, while at the same time not alienating your audience of, you know, like a lot of translators watch and consume NIMSY Insights content. We love our translators. You translators, you're awesome. They're not going to pay $50,000 for a consulting project, right?
Yeah.
So how do you make sure that your social media is targeting the right people while also serving the rest of your audience that aren't decision makers?
Yeah, I think you're doing things right. Like, I think as long as your audience is the, like, your target audience is the one that you ultimately have in mind for the content you're creating, the more other people who engage with your content, it's only beneficial. But especially when you have such a niche target, because that audience is going to be pretty small. If you want to like rank higher, if you want to like get more views and more followers on your different channels in order to like obviously like appear more relevant to the people that you actually are targeting, you actually do need to attract more than only your target audience.
Well, that's so true, because like looking at the magazine business, for example, right? Like, who wants to buy advertising in a magazine that has 20 subscribers? No one, right? So it's a symbiotic
those
relationship.
Subscribers are the only ones you actually need to reach. Exactly. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also hard to prove that. So it's better to have a wider net so that you can be, so it's more likely that the people you want to reach are within that.
Yeah. I mean, my thought on it, but I'm not a marketing strategist, right? My thought on it is just put out ad value. Right. Mm-hmm. Just add value to people, and who you attract, you're going to attract people. Right. And they're going to talk. And so that's why, you know, when people come on the podcast, I usually give them the spiel. I say, we have two rules: have fun and add value. That's it. Right. You got to do both. Otherwise, what the heck are we doing here? Right. So
yeah,
I think as long as
also, I completely agree, like 100%. And I think also you there's like the network effect as well. Like if, as long as those if those people are interested in the topics that you're talking about, it's because they're interested in your industry and they probably know people who could be your clients. Like there's more than just the direct sale.
This is very true. Well, Shaheen, I'm just watching the clock here. What have I forgot to ask you about? I didn't have time to ask ChatGPT for a list of questions, so I've been winging it today.
Okay, amazing. Didn't notice. So yeah, no, it's been a really fun conversation. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, tell us about, we talked about Vera Content. I will tell people, go on over on LinkedIn here. Make sure you're giving Shaheen a follow. Go follow Vera Content on LinkedIn, right? What else can I plug? I already, Vera Content is,
the website, veracontent.com.
Veracontent.com. Yeah. I brought it up earlier. I'm bringing it up now. Go check it out. If you want to see how actual marketers do things instead of people like me that just pretend to be marketers. yeah, I'm actually in charge of marketing for NIMSY.
I can tell. You know a lot about marketing.
It's kind of one of those roles. I'm just like, yeah, sure. No, but here at NIMSY, we have a great marketing team. We've got Isabel and Melissa that all of the stuff that we're putting out, it's all going through them. And man, if you find some good marketing managers out there to help your brand, they're worth their weight in gold. I'll tell you what, just don't overcomplicate it. I think that's my thing with marketing. You know, market within your budget and don't overcomplicate it. And I think you're good to go. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Ms. Shaheen, thank you so much for coming on today. And you'll probably see some snippets of this floating around Instagram, not TikTok, but we'll cut it up and we'll post it as a podcast and all of that stuff. And I really appreciate you coming on and just kind of giving me the opportunity to pick your brain today.
Yeah, thank you, Tucker, so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
All right. I will take us out here. Ladies, gentlemen, chat. We are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, make sure that you are following us on LinkedIn, because then you'll be first to find out when we schedule new events like this. If you have any suggestions for additional topics, additional guests that we should have on the program, reach out to live@nimsy.com. I appreciate our guests today. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these fun conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us live today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.